Welcome to From Doubt to Drive, Entrepreneurs Only. Join us on an inspired journey through the ups and downs of successful entrepreneurs. Our hosts, Mario C. Bauer and Florian Schneider, will explore how conquering doubt is essential for entrepreneurs to truly unleash drive. By being a part of our community, you too can learn how to propel from doubt to drive. So tune in, buckle up, and enjoy.
Welcome and welcome back. Hi, Florian. How are you doing?
Hi, Mario. I'm doing fine. How is Sri Lanka?
Very good. Are you still jet lagged, Florian? You had a long flight yesterday.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I can handle jet lag quite well.
That's good. Florian, actually, do you remember the first time you have ever eaten in a Sumo restaurant?
Yes, I do. It was in Dubai, I think 8-9 years ago. Amazing experience. I was completely flashed when I was there.
What did you eat? You still remember?
No, but it was, I think, a collection of sushi. And we were 5-6 people.
I hope you spend enough money for
it. I believe so, yes.
So today it's a big honor. We have one of the very few Germans, actually, who have created worldwide successful restaurants brands. There's not a lot of Germans who have done that. And he has created not just the Sumo, but also other brands like Rocca. And since over 20 years, Rainer Becker is very successful with over 30 restaurants. And I looked it up, over 250 million sales, restaurant in London, obviously, his home base, Hong Kong, Middle East, and Las Vegas. Welcome, Rainer. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you. Nice to have you have me in your podcast.
Thank you for doing that. We have a question around the topic of Schwellenangst. And as a German, you understand the word, but I have to explain the word to our English-speaking listener because there's no clear translation of the word Schwellenangst. It's basically the fear of threshold and borders. And I want to travel back long, long time because you had your career as a chef in Germany, then you moved to Asia, and then you had the idea of creating your own restaurant brand. And it's not that obvious that a German guy creates a Japanese restaurant brand. And I'm sure there have been some doubts back then from this young chef creating this idea. What was the biggest doubt or Schwellenangst you had back then? Or did you have so much confidence that you said, I'm going to make it? Or what was the fear you had back then?
No, obviously, there's always fear when you do something on your own. And my fear was obviously finding the right location first and finding the right country of kind of doing that idea, what I had in my mind. And at the time when I lived 6 years in Tokyo and decided then having my own restaurant, like every chef's dream is probably owning one day your little restaurant or whatever it is. And for many years, this was not my dream because I was very, very happy where I worked. And I worked with Hyatt International for 12 years, opened hotel restaurants around the world, got stuck in Tokyo and fell in love with the culture and design and everything about Japan, obviously the food. And then the idea of Sumo derived from there. At the time, I'm very honest with you, I heard that Nobu opened a restaurant in London, and I got to know Nobu many, many years ago, I think 1994, when he stayed with Robert De Niro at the Park Hyatt in Tokyo, and we became friends over the years. Mm-hmm. And we had a very, very close contact, and I knew about his success in London, that nobody could ever get a table in his restaurant, and you had to book 3-4 weeks in at once. And I think that kind of story gave me a certain confidence that there is a market for my idea for Sumo, which is slightly different concept what Nobu is all about or was all about. And he gave me the confidence that London is also probably the best city to try something out. Why London? Because London is a multicultural city. Mm-hmm. It's a very wealthy city. You have the stock market, you have tourism, you have old money, you have everything. And you have, it's one of the capital cities in the world. And I think in a smaller city, like, for example, Munich, or if you pick a German city, I think that concept would have had it very, very difficult at the time because you need the critical mass.
So you thought if you nail the location in the right cities where there's the purchasing power and the demand, you never doubted, because it's not that obvious. I mean, you lived in Japan, you said, and you're a great chef, but it's not that obvious that it needs a German guy to come up with a Japanese-inspired brand in London. You always had the confidence that you will rock the food part of it. You never had doubts at the beginning.
No, there was that doubt. I call it the natural fear of failure. And I think if you do not have it, then you shouldn't touch anything, because if you have that kind of feeling in your body that it also can go wrong, that drives you harder. That drives you to do your homework better and pushes you into the right kind of channels to look really at every single detail of what you're doing and question it. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, I was not that young anymore when I started it. I had a lot of experience. So there mm-hmm. was the confidence. I know what works in the food world. I've seen so many concepts. And that gave me the confidence. So there was a healthy balance between the fear of failure and the success, what I thought.
I like the thought that you need the natural fear, because it keeps you still tense and focused. I mean, all the famous actors say they still need to have that Bühnenangst, no? the stage Correct. Fright or whatever the English translation is.
Stage fever.
Because if you don't have it, I think you kind of get sloppy, probably.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And cocky and overconfident, perhaps. And there's a nice story about that one later on, probably. And then I remembered when we opened 2002, the first press, here we go, German chef, Indian business partner, Japanese restaurant. We give him 3 months.
There you go.
Here we go. And now we're 20 years later.
Come on, it sounds weird. Why would a German chef open a Japanese restaurant? Obviously, they didn't know my background. They just saw he is a German chef who wants to burn his fingers with Japanese food and has an Indian business partner. I mean, the combination was kind of very interesting.
Rainer, do you remember a specific moment in, let's say, in the beginning, 22 years ago, where you said, okay, this was a tough moment where I doubted for the first time doing that? Or
I never really doubted, because I knew, I met the designer of Zuma, Mr. Sugimoto from Super Potato. I knew his design from Japan, and I fell in love with his design, because that worked very well with his design philosophy worked very, very well with my food philosophy. Mm-hmm. So only best produce, best materials, keep it simple, don't overcomplicate things. And that's in harmony with each other, I would say. So I never really doubted. But like I said earlier, you never know until you open the doors. Do actually your customers like what you like? And there was a confidence, but then there was also naturally the kind of lot of heart pumping moments. The adrenaline was pumping, and is it going to work? And the sleepless nights and long hours of work. And but it was a fantastic time.
Do you still have sleepless nights now, today?
I sleep better now. No, but look, in the early years, the adrenaline kept you going, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I never saw that kind of what I've done as work. It just, I just enjoyed it. You know, for me, it was kind of also like a hobby, what I've done. And then in the first couple of years, and then the hobby turned into work a little bit, right? Because when we expanded, then your focus is on different things.
But Rainer, a lot of because you said expanded, a lot of the people we interviewed, they always say the most difficult restaurant is the second one and not the first, because the first you put in the attention, but then you get the success, and then you become like a little bit too self-confidence on the ramping up of building your over 30 restaurants. Like, looking back, what was the bumpy one? What was the one which...
I tell you the bumpy one. The second one, I opened in Hong Kong. Uh-huh. And the second one, I was as careful than the first one, because going kind of back to Asia, even though China is completely different than Japan, but it was far away of London. And my business partner's nephew, he lived in Hong Kong at the time, and he loved Zoom. And he said, "Rainer, come on, let's do something in Hong Kong. Let's do something in Hong Kong." And I knew I knew Hong Kong from my earlier years with Hyatt. And I thought, yeah, Hong Kong is a very, very cool city. Let's do it. So just let's do it. There was no business plan. It was just, come on, let's do it. The adrenaline kept us going. So we opened Hong Kong in 2007. And I was very nervous, obviously. But I did exactly the same what I've done in London, food-wise. All the dishes which worked in London came exactly the same recipes onto Hong Kong, because you can say that Hong Kong was also a multicultural city, a lot of expatriates living there. So I didn't have to, or I didn't want to change the flavor or just changing the flavor for Hong Kong palate. That didn't really exist. It's exactly what it was. And it worked very, very well. And then in the meantime, I opened Roca in 2004 in London. So then Hong Kong worked so well, and my business partner there said, "Listen, Rainer, come, let's go to Macau. We opened the Roca in Macau." And then I think I got a bit cocky with it, because the early success of London and Roca London, and then going to Hong Kong and worked, and then opening Roca in Macau, we didn't do any market survey. We just went blindly into the market, and we fall on our face.
So it was restaurant number 4 then, Rainer? Is that correct?
Restaurant number 4. Yes,
so what did you do wrong back then? Was it the wrong location, wrong management?
Hong Kong at the time, obviously we went into a casino. Macau, we went into a casino.
Casino, yeah.
And we thought that the kind of mentality would be similar than the Las Vegas mentality of customers.
Mm-hmm.
Going to show, going for a nice dinner, and then gambling. Mm-hmm. But it's completely the opposite, because Macau is all about gambling and gambling only.
Gambling.
So we opened in the Venetian, and I think many, many other concepts also. And none of these concepts worked. We didn't work either. So after a year and a half and $3.5 million later, we closed the door.
So an expensive mistake. Expensive was there exercise, anything comparable over the years where you lost that much money, or was that your most painful learning?
I think that was the most painful one, yeah. But you know, that brings you back to basic. Because we didn't really do, or I didn't really do a market survey there and see, listen, is it really the city we want to be? Is it really going to work? What is the mentality of the market? So we didn't, none of that. We just went in. We took the location. They've been offered it to us. The Venetian was pretty new. And I think Macau was at the early years of gambling, internationally gambling. So now I think things have changed. And perhaps now Roca would work in Macau. But when your fingers are burnt, then you stay away from it.
That hurts. I mean, I want to go back to London, because obviously you opened in a very, very good time in London, but also over the last couple of years, London got a lot of bumpiness. We had obviously Brexit, we had a very heavy hit on COVID, and now also by the city losing too many influential companies. How did you feel this London over the years? Was London always good to you, or did you had your troubles?
London was always good to us, but like Brexit, and then we had, 9/11 was a difficult time, and COVID was a difficult time, definitely. But I think people, once COVID is over, I think people still want to go out. Mm-hmm. Perhaps if they do not have the money what they had before, perhaps they don't go out 4 or 5 times a week. Perhaps 2 times, but you want to be on that list of the 2 times that the restaurants where you go out. So you need to be better than your competitors. And if you are giving a very, very good product and a good service, then your customer will remember what they've got before the crisis, and they will come back to you. That's what I inspire, motivate my team and say, listen, consistency. You know, even in not so good times, you can be very successful if you do your homework and you give what the customer really wants to see.
Mm-hmm. That's also the learning. What I took out from your explanations, that failure brings you back to basics out of Macau. Was COVID also, a moment in time where you said, because you are so international and on so many continents, mm-hmm. that you said different situations requires different actions. And what did you do then?
Are you an entrepreneur experiencing growth pains? Your business is expanding rapidly, but you're grappling with obstacles such as people, structure, or funding. Perhaps it's time to challenge your current approach, seek other perspectives, and to discover new tactics to overcome these hurdles. Come and join our seminar, Navigate Uncertainty with Confidence, your retreat, reset, restart, Sri Lanka, from the 7th to the 14th of September. For more information, please visit www.fromdoubttodrive.com. And now, back to the show.
Look, let's be positive about, you can't be positive about COVID, but let's be positive in our situation. Because we were internationally
spread out,
that helped us during COVID, because once, for example, Dubai was open again, we could trade in Dubai, then that cash flow helped London, whilst London was still closed. And worldwide, we helped each other, all the restaurants helped each other. And I wanted to keep all my people within the company. Mm-hmm. And that was for me most important, because at the time, yes, nobody knew how long COVID will take. And we worked out we could keep our employees for X amount of months before our cash reserves run out. And we kept them all, because I'm a very positive person. After bad things, good things come again, right? So if you let your people go, then you need to start from scratch. So we burned all our cash reserves. We helped each other within the restaurants. And stuck together, and everybody got a 20% pay cut, which they actually supported as well, because they said, listen, then we have more money and we can employ you for a longer time in case it runs out. So we stuck together as a family, and it worked out well for us. I mean, not well. Yes, we lost a lot of money, but the company stayed together. We didn't have to close the restaurant.
And Rainer, what kind of leadership you think you applied during that COVID crisis? You went hands on, all in. Everybody was nervous after COVID, especially when you have a very high fixed cost because you have a lot of people and you have high paid people. What kind of leadership approach you took in that crisis? Because it was a crisis for all of us and people reacted differently. Yep. Did you change your style on how you have been leading your company during that time?
No, I didn't change my style, but what we've done, we started right away takeaway, you know, mm-hmm. and this is something completely new for us. And we worked something out, and then I went back into where it all started, Zuma London.
Into the trenches.
And we had we had a fantastic time, because it also brought the team back together where it started, because we're a very, very small team. We did the takeaway boxes and the orders came in, and we did 300-400 covers just on takeaways after we market ourselves. And that helped also with the cash flow, right?
Sure.
So every little helped.
And the loyalty of the brand, the loyalty towards the brand.
Yeah. Huh? And staying positive. You know, obviously everybody was nervous and is it going to work? Are we going to be affected by COVID? You worked with masks and the gloves and the whole lot. And I mean, different times, crazy. Right? Yeah. But you make the best out of it, or you try to make the best out of it.
Crazy times. Rainer, you are from the Mosel area in Germany, a very rural area, vineyards, etc. And then you traveled the world. Are there differences in Australia, in Asia, in Europe, where you say, this, I need to tackle issues and problems differently? Is there something you experienced?
Yeah, 100%. I think every culture works a bit different. I think Australia, very, very open-minded people. They work to live and not like us, live to work. So I kind of enjoyed my time in Australia a lot. And then going from Sydney, Australia, to Tokyo, where everything is completely different. And you cannot come with a management approach like what you had in Australia, where you make a decision and things move to Japan. It doesn't work like that. You sit in a group. And once everybody is happy, then you make the decision. So, but it's sometimes sitting for hours and hours and listening to all the challenges. But the bottom line is you need to make a call, you need to move on. So it's learning the culture, respecting the culture, not trying to change the culture, live with the culture and enhance it and make it best for you that you can do your job also.
Is there a specific area or culture where you said, I learned the most out of it, how to deal with problems? Is the Japanese way
Japan,
No,
so, I think it's a mixture of what I learned in Japan, how I get from A to B, and then that helped me later on also, you know, because it's so different and it opens your mind. And if you're not open-minded, you will never succeed in Japan.
Yeah.
If you come with the Western mentality and you go to Japan and say you need to do it the Western way, you are lost. You are really lost in translation. So you need to open your mind and you need to find your feet in making decisions, right? So it's respecting the culture. And once they respect you and you respect their culture, I tell you, I had the best time of my life there. But the first 2 years, they were so, so difficult. And I almost would have run away. But once you get into it, and like I said, once they respect you and you respect them, it's
fantastic. So, Lena, now we talked about the Australian culture and the Asian and your success. And now, after so many years, you bring your main baby, Suma, to your home country, to Germany. Why it took so long? Why it took so long?
Here we go. This is actually the good point, what you mentioned earlier, Schwellenangst.
Yeah.
You know, I'm German. Naturally, I would love to have a restaurant in Germany. But I also remember when I worked in, I mean, the biggest city I worked in Germany was Munich in 1987. And I remember like Sunday evening, Monday and Tuesday were the slow days of the week. And if you know Zuma is a very, very labor-intense concept with open kitchens. And it lives from the energy of the customer. The chefs are busy. And the whole package needs to work. So I need a lot of people in the restaurant who creates an energy that the chefs are busy. And I obviously do not want to change the concept for Germany. So I want to stick to my roots or whatever. And so the restaurant also needs to work on Monday. It needs to be busy on Monday. And we are doing a 3-month promotion over the summer. Promotion, I kind of start in Munich, where I see, you know, perhaps the Germans don't like my product. I don't know. I just want to feel it out and let's see.
But that's interesting, Ryan, and I'm very thankful that you shared it open. But it's interesting, I think, a reminder for all of us, because this is a podcast from entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs, and it shows that even people successful like you, with like over 30 restaurants and such a track record, still have that Schwellenangst in some moments. And I think it's completely natural and also good and sometimes healthy to have that. I want to use that moment, Rainer, because we need to also come to the end. If you advise or mentor people in our space who run through difficult problems, what's kind of your first tool set to apply? If somebody comes with an issue, independent, whatever problem, but a big problem, running out of money, needed to close, running out of people, whatever it is, what's your first approach to a problem? How do you guide these people through if they look for advice to you?
Kill your ego. You need to kill your ego. You can't go into a business with an ego and say, listen, I'm the best chef in the world. You need to eat what I'm cooking kind of approach. You need to go without an ego, with an open approach. You need to have experience in what you're doing. Don't jump without any experience in something what you don't know. So I was kind of lucky that I have a lot of experience. So there were always this kind of question marks at the end. But, you know, you believe in what you're doing. You have a lot of experience. And be positive about it. When things go wrong, you know, move on. You know, be honest to yourself.
I love that advice. Heal your ego, Rainer. I think this is we have to end here because we always have to end the podcast at the peak. Thank you for being so open and so humble of sharing your story. I think there was a lot of learnings in there. Thank you for taking the time and goodbye. Thank you.
And good luck for Munich. Good luck for
Munich.
Good
luck. Good luck.
Thank you. Hope to see you there.
Wow, what a podcast. You can really have fun with the German guy, Florian.
Absolutely. I mean, his career is outstanding, and the products and the restaurants as well. So I'm really looking forward when he comes to Germany because we have to go there.
Yeah, definitely. That will be our Christmas party. I think for me, it was really, I thought at the beginning when he talked about the Schwellenangst, it felt it's very long back in him, but it was so honest and humble that he brought it back and say, I have it now. I mean, it's a big thing for him bringing home his main baby, Suma, to Munich. And he, you could feel it and you could see it. You could feel his Schwellenangst. And it's nice to see because it shows to all of us and to our listeners out there, it's a completely natural thing. What else, Florian?
Absolutely.
What else did we have?
But that's what he said. No? Natural fear. You have a natural fear as an entrepreneur.
And natural fear of failure.
Natural fear of failure. Yeah. And it resonates completely with me that he says the place of origin where I come from makes it very, very difficult. And you rather go far,
like
far
holy,
away.
Yeah. No, the Prophet im eigenen Heim, whatever the prophet, how you say that actually? We're gonna need to look that up and put it into the show notes. But he also said, like, the failure brings you back to basic. When he shared this cockiness of opening in Macau and said, like, I have not done my homework. I haven't done my homework.
And another thing I actually put down is he said, and you felt that, no? You have to stay positive. And even though you have to have this self-esteem and confidence that you can do it, and he also referred on experience and things like that, he said that, on the other hand, you need to kill your ego in such situations.
Yeah, very strong quote. Kill your ego is like, kill your ego was a strong one. What I also liked is that you say, this, he is a natural positive guy, but he said after bad things, good things happen. He believes in this circle. And I think it was quite interesting because in this talk before we started recording, he said, I'm not sure if I'm the right guy for you because I'm such a positive guy. Yeah. Like, I have my troubles, but I overcome them. You could feel that after bad things, good things happen.
Yeah.
I also have the learning. It was nice that he shared that when he started working in Australia, and he said they work to live and not live to work. And then he comes to the completely opposite place of Japan. And he said, like, he had these 2 years where he almost gave up, but then he learned so much. He said how to get from A to B, which still helps him now. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Keep it simple. We heard that a lot of time. KISS, as our friend Enrico Sodaro says, keep it simple. Keep it stupid and simple. Don't overthink. It was also like, in a crisis, kill your ego and keep it simple and don't overthink. I think it was a really, really strong podcast, and I wish you, because such a nice guy, that the opening, and we're going to do our Christmas Musketeers Christmas dinner, guys, in Suma in Munich. Okay,
bye-bye,
guys. Ciao.
Bye.
Wow. We hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as we did. But sharing is not just caring. It is also empowering. So recommend this podcast to fellow entrepreneurs who might need a dose of inspiration. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you'll never miss out on future episodes. Thank you for being part of the community From Doubt to Drive, Entrepreneurs Only. Mario and Florian are already gearing up for the next episode. Until then, stay tuned, stay driven, and we'll be back next week.